Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. Boris Chassaigne here with you for the next half hour. On today's show, we're back in British Columbia, where authorities are still fighting more than 300 forest fires. Severe drought could also become a serious problem.
I'm calling on everyone, including businesses, to follow water restrictions set by First Nations or local authorities and take steps to conserve water even above and beyond those restrictions.
A Canadian travels 70,000 kilometers over 8 years without a motor. Marcus Pekonen has finally arrived home in Canada, where his route of change journey started.
And I figured, you know, if I do something big and crazy, big challenge, I should be able to find the support to make it happen and be able to get some attention to support these other organizations.
A new art exhibit opens in Fort McMurray, Alberta. It's called Intersections, and it features art pieces from both Indigenous and LGBTQ plus artists.
Our Two-Spirit people are sacred people. They were part of our ceremonies. They were in the lodges with the medicine people. And it's time that we make space for them and uplift them back to their rightful places of leadership.
And a feel-good story from Cobourg, Ontario. The Stuff the Bus campaign collects 2,000 backpacks filled with essential school supplies for children in need. Welcome to Viewpoints.
Local news nationwide.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
Hello and thanks for being with us. So again this week we start the show out west in British Columbia, where things are getting worse. Forest fires keep burning, and we'll talk about that in a while with Daniel Messek, based in Smithers. But first, we learned from Megan Dooling in Revelstoke, BC, that the provincial government reports that drought conditions across the province are becoming extreme and is calling on British Columbians to shift their mindset to be more aware of water conservation. The level and extent of drought that we're seeing this early in the season is deeply concerning, says Bowen Ma, the Minister of Emergency Management and Climate Preparedness. The province is able to restrict water use licensees from using water. These include industries like fracking, oil and gas, mining and agriculture. And recently, the province did restrict water use for fracking in Peace Region. Although the drought began last fall, the heat wave at the end of April and beginning of May is what led to the current conditions. Jonathan Boyd with the River Forecast Center said it was the hottest May on record and the quickest snowmelt on record as well. Boyd said that prolonged atmospheric river-like rainfall is needed to make up for the current shortfall. In Revelstoke, BC, here's Megan Dooling.
BC is in extreme drought. Bowen Ma is the Minister of Emergency Management and Climate Readiness.
We are anticipating a very serious drought season that will require actions from everyone. That likely means every industry, every business, every individual across the province.
There are four water basins at level 5, the highest drought level. They are Bulkley Lakes in the center of BC, Fort Nelson in the northeastern corner of the province, and all of Vancouver Island. Revelstoke is in the Upper Columbia Basin, which is at level 3. At this level, adverse impacts of drought are possible. A stream flow map from the BC government shows the Illecillewaet River at Greeley Creek at drought level 5, the most extreme. This information is online at the BC Drought Information Portal. These levels are reported weekly. The Lower Columbia watershed is at drought level 4, where adverse impacts are likely. Ma said that British Columbians are used to having lots of fresh, clean water available. She said that people will have to shift their mindset to one of conservation.
I'm calling on everyone, including businesses, to follow water restrictions set by First Nations or local authorities and take steps to conserve water even above and beyond those restrictions.
This includes watering lawns sparingly, if at all, taking shorter showers, and being mindful of washing machine and dishwasher use. The government is working with water licensees and have stopped allowing some water diversion for fracking in the Peace Region. Farmers are struggling to feed cattle, and the beef and dairy industry will be impacted by this. Low stream flows will likely affect water ecosystems and fish. Although the drought began last fall, the heat wave in early May is what really got it cooking. Jonathan Boyd is with the River Forecast Center. He said that this May was the hottest on record in BC. He said that corresponded with the quickest snowmelt on record.
So with less precipitation and a fairly rapid melt and early melt, we're seeing the response in stream flows, and it's very low. So as of July 10th, 81 stations across the province were at their all-time record low for that date, and that's about a quarter of the stations. And another 187 stations were at the fifth percentile or lower, and that's more than 50%. And what the fifth percentile means would be it has a 5% chance of occurring on any given year, or a recurrence period of a 1-in-20-year type drought. So having over half of the sites already below a 1-in-20-year drought is pretty extraordinary.
The city of Revelstoke has water restrictions in place, but they're more so the city can fill its reservoir every evening with treated water. Steve Black is the city's lead engineer. He said precipitation is lower than normal and that people need to be mindful of water consumptions. By law, people can only irrigate every second day in the morning. Black said the city will increase restrictions if water use in the evenings continues to be as high as it is. Bylaw is enforcing the water use rules, Black said. Ma said the province is working with municipalities, regional districts, and First Nations to encourage them to restrict water use and to enforce the restrictions.
So for a lot of community members, I recognize that it might not feel real right now. We are here saying that absolutely it is real. Communities are putting in water restrictions. We need people to follow them. We are asking communities to escalate water restrictions.
Boyd and Ma say droughts are tricky because often the effects won't be felt for months. That's why they say it's important for people to be mindful of water consumption now.
The biggest fear would be if we have dry conditions like we did last year moving into September and October. And only time will tell, but if that were to happen, we could end up in a pretty significant drought at the time when flows typically are at their lowest.
It did rain heavily in Revelstoke on Monday evening. Boyd said prolonged atmospheric river-like rainfall is needed to replenish our water levels. I'm Megan Dooling.
Hi, I'm Kareem Mosnay, Kingston, Ontario. You are tuned to Viewpoints.
And we stay in BC as Canadian military and U.S. personnel just arrived to lend a helping hand as wildfires continue to rage across the province. One of the epicenters is now the Central Interior Cariboo region, as well as the Nadine region and southern parts of the Northwest Fire Center. Currently, there are some 300 active fires in the province. Evacuation alerts and orders are still in place for many communities, and although cooler temperatures in some parts of the region helped over the weekend, hot and dry conditions continued this week. However, the BC Wildfire Service, BCWS, announced that additional Australian and American resources arrived in BC over the weekend, as well as Coast Guards and Canadian Armed Forces. This in addition to approximately 2,000 BCWS members and more than 180 international resources already dispatched in BC. Daniel Messick is in Smithers, BC. He spoke with Clip Chapman, a director of provincial operations for the BC Wildfire Service.
Obviously, the situation across the province, but primarily in the central and northern part of the province over the last number of days has been significant. We have seen more fire on the landscape in terms of number of starts, as well as the continuation of hectares burned on the landscape. Than we have seen in previous years at this point in time. At this point in time, we have over 1,000 fires that have started since April in BC and currently have still just under 400 of those fires currently burning. The more significant, or at least as significant number, is the just over 1.2 million hectares that have burnt so far this year. Compared to our 10-year average, which is roughly 76,000 hectares, it is a significant wildfire season in this province. I want to just express on behalf of BC Wildfire Service, the Ministry of Forests, and the provincial government, just express our empathy for the people who are impacted in those communities, around those communities, whether it be First Nation communities, local governments, industry stakeholders, folks that want or generally use the land base for their means. We recognize it has been impactful. And I want to just issue a sincere thank you to all the communities who have been so welcoming to our staff, who want to work with us to get to a common outcome of really limiting these impacts the fires are having on the landscape. It has been really heartwarming for BC Wildfire Service to feel welcome into the communities in which we are present right now. Local governments and First Nation governments wanting to work with us on solutions to the challenge of the fire season that we are up against. And we can't do it without you. And so I just want to issue a sincere thank you to everybody, including the general public, who you are a big source of our detection right now for new fires. Those of you who live in the north know that it's been very smoky, know that there is lots of fire on the landscape, and it is difficult to detect fires. It is the public who is calling in so many of our fires right now, and we truly appreciate your diligence and you calling into our 1-800 number or *5555 on your cell phone. Over the course of the last week, 7 days, BC has received roughly 51,000 lightning strikes. That's not significantly above average for us, but in that short of a period of time, it is above average. And of those 51,000 strikes, 76 of them have been in the Prince George and Northwest Fire Centers. We have had 392 fires in the last 7 days. 230 of those fires remain out of control, and many of those fires are present in the two fire centers that are with us today, representing Prince George and Northwest Fire Centers. Over the coming 6 to 10 days, we are going to see roughly 200 to 300 staff from Australia, Mexico, as well as the United States coming to support our effort. And we're obviously looking forward to having those resources come into the province. In addition to the ground personnel, we have 101 helicopters working for BC Wildfire right now. And we have an aircraft fleet, a fixed wing aircraft fleet. So that's our tanker program. We have 35 airplanes that are supporting us with aviation operations. So we have a fairly significant aviation operation right now, as well as a ground operation, which we are continuing to try to add to with support of other agencies.
That was Cliff Chapman, Director of Provincial Operations for the BC Wildfire Service. A footnote to that story, smoke from the BC wildfires impacted Quebec's air quality last week, which was under smog alert for 3 days. Forest fires are also burning strong in Quebec.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
Canadian Marcus Buchonen has traveled over 70,000 kilometers over 8 years without a motor. In his global adventure, Buchonen wanted to keep his CO2 emissions to a minimum. He avoided all planes, trains, and automobiles. And after 8 years of traveling the globe without a motor, Marcus Buchonen has finally arrived home in Canada, where his journey started. Buchonen is the founder of the nonprofit society Roots of Change. The goal of his odyssey and organization is to promote sustainable travel while making us aware of the impact we have on the world. Buchonen says he fully committed to the idea in his head in 2009 during a rough period in his life. His dedication to zero emission travel has led him to walk, bike, and pogo stick across the world. Here he is, talking with Owen Thompson in Toronto, Ontario, about how he came up with that crazy project.
I came up with the idea when I was fighting forest fires in British Columbia, and I had done that work for a number of years. For a long time, I had actually worked seasonally in British Columbia, and then I would travel down to Central and South America, where I could live quite comfortably on a small budget. And, I started seeing how my purchase choices in Canada and just my life in Canada were affecting communities all over the world. There's a number of different things that influenced me. I was just sort of attempting to be more of the change that I wanted to see in the world, like Gandhi. but I got to a point where I didn't feel like that was enough. And part of my inspiration came from reading this book actually called Blessed Unrest. And it just inspired me to know that there were people all over the world who were not giving up on our species and the health of this planet. And it inspired me to get more involved in environmental and social activism. But at the same time, I had no interest in working in an office doing that sort of work. And so I basically was figuring out how I could combine what I am passionate about and create my dream job. It was right at that time, at the end of a fire season, that my dad called me up and said he had 2 weeks to live. If he didn't do some serious chemo, he would die. On my way home to see him on a plane, the irony is not lost on me, I formulated this Roots of Change plan. And it was basically came from the question, what would I want to be doing with my life if I found out that I was going to die in 2 weeks? How could I be living my life with no regrets? The Roots of Change project was my answer to that question. And my dad ended up surviving another 6 months, but then passed. Right before he passed, he was able to meet my niece, who had been born 2 weeks before. My other sister had also just become sober after a long battle with drugs and alcohol. And all of these things combined just sort of made me think about my impact on the future and what I was doing with my life. And so I just sort of started working towards this dream of mine, went back to school for documentary filmmaking and started looking for a budget for a film, because that's how I figured I would make this into my job and make a film out of it and get a budget that way. But that did not come easily. And eventually it wasn't until 7 years later that I finally grew up the courage to just start the journey with very little financial backing and support. Yeah, I just went for it. Hoped it would work out.
How long ago, because you brought up your father's unfortunate passing. If you don't mind me asking, when did that happen?
That was in 2009. So it was, yeah, ways back.
This brings me to, I guess, my next question of why zero emissions? Why no motors?
Well, so I wanted to, as part of the main mission of the journey, is to highlight and raise support for other local non-governmental grassroots environmental and social justice organizations. And in doing that, I mean, often their battles are against these big corporations, often oil and gas corporations, who are destroying their land and their environment. And so I figured I should, you know, I limit my support of these corporations in doing what I do. Instead of flying around the world or taking helicopters around the world, I figured I would just draw my line of support in the sand at that point and just not use motors. Of course, I'm not blind to the fact that much of our world functions in some way thanks to motors, but I think we have an exaggerated view of how we need to rely on them. I think we've forgotten that it wasn't long ago that we survived quite happily and healthily without them. I also just really love a good adventure, and I really love being athletic outdoors. And so that mission of not using motors lends itself very well to what I'm also passionate about. And yeah, and I figured, you know, if I do something big and crazy, big challenge, I should be able to find the support to make it happen and be able to get some attention to support these other organizations.
After, I guess, 8 years of motorless transportation, what's the hardest part about it, about doing that?
You know, the hardest part is the fact that the world is no longer designed to move around without motors. Highways and roads and border crossings and bureaucracy are all sort of up against me. And one of my biggest concerns was that bureaucracy somewhere along the way would force me into a vehicle just because they can, and they like to use their power to express their, you know, their dominance over you at times. But that never happened, thankfully. I did have a lot of challenges at border crossings. Of course, I'm doing something that these people who have the power to say no would prefer to say no, as opposed to feel responsible for the death of a foreigner in their territory. But thankfully, I had a friend who was, right before I started the journey, he was elected to as a member of parliament, and he wrote me a letter that sort of helped to soothe governments' concerns around the world. It was sort of like my get out of jail free card. It wasn't. It did help me cross borders here and there. Basically said that I was not just some crazy lunatic out on a mission to kill himself. I actually had a purpose and the support of my community back home, and basically put the responsibility less on these people and more on my own government and my own community. So that was nice to have.
Well, there's a lot more from where that came from. In fact, 25 more minutes of conversation. Want to learn more about his 8-year trip around the world? Tune in to canada-info.ca and spot Owen Thompson's interview with Marcus Buchanan.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints. Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Get all our stories on canada-info.ca.
A new art exhibit opens in Fort McMurray, Alberta. The exhibit, entitled Intersections, features art pieces from both Indigenous and LGBTQ+ artists. It is shown at the Jubilee Center lobby and will remain there until August 31st. The Cree name for the exhibit roughly translates to where the trail meets. Curator Jess Croucher put the exhibition together and brought in featured art by Dan Cardinal McCartney, Mitchell Bowers, Natasha Gouge Burkett, Amanda Hall, Bex Lee, Broke McMillan, and Kritsana Nawakun. From Edmonton, Alberta, here's Ryan Hunt's interview with Jess Croucher and one of the featured artists, Dan Cardinal McCartney.
The Intersections Art Exhibition had its grand opening in Fort McMurray on July 13th. It features art from Indigenous as well as LGBTQ+ artists. Jess Croucher, the curator at Puamu Creative, put together the art exhibition and spoke about it and shared its Cree name.
The exhibition is called Miskanawa Kotik Takwau. In Cree, it means roughly where the trail meets. So an intersection that you would find in the bush. Intersections in our identity, they represent how there's interconnectedness in a person's culture, their gender, their race, their sexuality, their age, their class, their physical abilities, and more. But most importantly, this is about intersections in identity. And so we're featuring, and I hope in the process, uplifting Two-Spirit LGBTQ+ stories and voices.
One of the featured artists, Dan Cardinal McCartney, has his own art gallery in Calgary, but is from Fort McMurray. He also spoke about how he feels about having his art featured in his hometown.
It's a big switch as a director of a gallery down south in Calgary. To bring my artwork home in Fort McMurray means so much to me, especially as a First Nations artist, as a queer Two-Spirit artist, to have my work curated by Jess Crochet. It means a lot to bring my story home and for my family to see my artwork as well. I think that's just like the icing on top of the cake, right? Just to have the family and the friends gather around. So it means a lot, especially after the wildfire in 2016. A lot of the artwork features work and literal pieces of bark and wood from the fire. So it's really about that celebration and rejuvenation, I think. It feels really great.
Croucher goes into what this exhibition means to her, as well as the importance of the exhibition's message, which is to promote inclusion and collaboration.
Art and activism, they go hand in hand. They're in a relationship. Every opportunity we have to curate an exhibition, there's always a nuance of advocacy within it. And I'm grateful for that. And so this exhibition means gratitude and honor to be able to be trusted to share these stories. Our Two-Spirit people are sacred people. They were part of our ceremonies. They were in the lodges with the medicine people. And it's time that we make space for them and uplift them back to their rightful places of leadership. And so I'm grateful to even just be a little tiny part of their journey as they make their way back to the place of power that they belong in.
The art exhibition is located in the lobby of the Jubilee Center in Fort McMurray and will be open until August 31st. I'm Ryan Hunt.
And we close the show in Cobourg, Ontario, where the Northumberland United Way has partnered with local police forces to address the growing needs of its Backpacks for Kids program. The Stuff the Bus campaign aims to collect 2,000 backpacks, double what the original goal was last year. Launched in 2005 when 100 backpacks were distributed, more than 20,000 backpacks have since been filled with essential school supplies for children in need, but that need is growing every year. Acting Executive Director Maggie Darling said the goal last year was to collect and fill 1,000 backpacks. That number is now up to 2,000 from Cobourg, Ontario. Here's Jeff Gard.
As the need continues to grow for its Backpacks for Kids program, the Northumberland United Way has partnered with local police forces this year in an effort to collect 2,000 backpacks with the Stuff the Bus campaign. That's double the goal of last year, United Way Acting Executive Director Maggie Darling.
Last year we had aimed to do about 1,000, but the week of the program we started to receive a lot more requests and we ended up having a wait list for the first time in the history of the program. Thankfully, with the community support we received, we were able to ensure that every child received a backpack that was on that wait list. So we distributed over 1,500 last year. Recognizing the significant increase we saw last year, we're hoping that 2,000 backpacks will help to anticipate any additional increase.
Darlene said the United Way teamed up with the Cobourg Police Service last year and they made a great donation to the program. And now the Port Hope Police Service and Northumberland OPP are involved as well for the Stuff the Bus campaign. In a release, Cobourg Police Chief Paul Vandegraaff said that a backpack and a few quality school supplies can help set children up for success at school. The Backpacks for Kids program helps reduce stigma and increases confidence so a young student can focus on learning. Darlene agrees and said, "The Backpack for Kids program and the Stuff the Bus campaign addresses the reality that not everyone can afford the necessary supplies.
These are items that unfortunately can get overlooked. So we've had some comments from parents before, you know, I only had so much money and it was between, you know, a new pair of shoes or a backpack. So if we're able to fill that need for our individuals and families in our community, then that's a great opportunity for us to fill that gap."
I'm Jeff Gard.
And this concludes this edition of Viewpoints. Our journalists this week were Owen Thompson, Ryan Hunt, Danielle Messick, Megan Dooling, and a first contribution from Jeff Gard. National editors Victoria Fenner and Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada with help from your local radio station. I'm Boris Chassagne, your host and producer. Thanks again for keeping us company. Stay tuned to the show that follows. Until next week, ciao.
Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.